All right, good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, February 22nd, 11, 12, 11, 13 a.m. We're doing Chem 12A. And I was just mentioning, you know, there's a lot of people that are following this remotely. There's a lot of people that aren't showing up to class to do the live sessions. And if you can make it happen, if you can make the live sessions happen, that is the way to go. And I'll tell you, the scores from the quizzes were not very solid. There was a lot of shaky people in that last quiz. Happy Tuesday. 2-2-22-22. Nice. There was a lot of shaky people in that quiz. And I think a lot of that has to do with, usually I don't see that. Usually I see that resonance quiz not be quite that shaky. And usually we're dealing with a lot of these things in person. And also, I haven't said this either, but I'm seeing like two people in office hours and, or one who is consistent and then pretty much nobody else. And that's really, really unusual for OCHEM. It used to be that when we were in person, I would sit in my office outside of my office hours. I was in my office all the time and people would come by and drop in and we would chat and we would go over problems. People would come out of biology and in the middle of their biology class and come over to my office just to see if I was there to hit a few problems. And I would say that about 30% of the teaching got done in office hours. And that's 30% that's not happening. And so that's something that really needs to change. And if that means that I need to put office hours someplace else in order to get you guys access, then you got to let me know if we need to extend or add office hours. But also you can email me and I'm not even getting those emails in terms of questions and problems. And so that leads me to ask, are you guys really doing the work that you need to do? So I have some concerns and we've got to sort that out. Okay, let's, today office hours, 1 to 2 o'clock. And I'll be back on again. I have office hours every day, usually around that 1 to 2 or 12:30 to 1:30 on Monday, Wednesday. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. And I'm gonna do a screen share. We'll get the iPad up and running. And then from here, I need to go to OCHEM, start a new one. Okay, so we have been doing acid-base stuff. And what we covered in acid-base so far is we looked at resonance, we looked at size, we looked at electronegativity, we're going to come back and we're going to hit all of those things again, but those are what we did in the last lecture. We're going to put them into context by looking at a number of problems that have each one of these things in it. And that doesn't say resonance for some reason. There we go. And the next one that we're going to look at now is induction. And then we kind of need to bring them all together. So some pieces of data that I've got. Let's look at some data. If I take a carboxylic acid and we're looking at the acidity of that proton, so that we're looking at that guy dissociating into O minus and H plus, the pKa here is 4.76. If I take and I put another carbon onto it. I'm going to list a bunch of pKa's now for a series of acids. So the pKa here is 4.87. If I take and put a fluorine on it, the pKa falls to 2.59. If I take and I put a chlorine, the pKa goes to 2.86. I want to hit a couple more here, and I'm drawing a little bit big, so I'm going to scrunch these up so I can fit a few more into my list. I might need to shift my list over. Put in a bromide. pKa goes to 2.90. An iodide, and the pK goes to 3.17. And then the last one that I want to do is a trifluoroacetic acid. So if I throw three fluorine groups onto this, the pKa goes to 0.50. Okay, so let me scroll out so we can see all of the data there. So this is all of the data. So the question is, what is going on here? How do we take this data and make any sense out of this data and what this data is telling us? First off, we can look at this and we can say, all right, the lower the pKa, the more acidic something is. And so this one is the most acidic. And they seem to be going in order of going from iodide to bromide, iodide to bromide to chloride to fluoride, that as we go in that sequence, that they're going to more acidic. Here with this one, I'm going to draw a line and stop there so that we can order these in a different way. This is more acidic. This is less. And then, of course, we have the acetic acid and the propanoic acid that are in there that are even less acidic in these. But we put a fluorine, a chlorine, a bromide, an iodide, and we see that the pKa changes. And so what is going on with these? Well, these are electronegative elements. So fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, we know about the electronegativity of these. So that if I look at electronegativity alone, and I look at fluoride, chloride, bromide, and iodide, that this is increasing electronegativity, increasing ability to be able to pull electrons. And so when I look at an acid that has a halogen in this position, and let's just say that we put X there, then what this is telling me about these pKa's is the pKa is telling me about the stability of this conjugate. So the pKa relates to the stability of the conjugate base. And as that relates to that stability, what that means is that I can rank these in terms of stability, that if the fluoride in this position is the most acidic, then that means that this guy is going to be the most stable conjugate for fluoride. And so what we see here is that in terms of stability, if I take and rank them, O minus with the fluoride being most stable, and that means that this is the weakest base. And then we go in sequence that as I go to the chloride, the bromide, and the iodide, that what's happening is this is the least stable. And it is the strongest base in the sequence. And so why is that? Well, we know that delocalization of charge is a stabilizing factor. And yet these all have the same resonance. So they can't have any more resonance. Each one of these has identical resonance with it. And that resonance is only going back and forth between the two oxygens. So that means that this electronegative element has something to do with it. And what that has to do with it is delocalization of charge. And so what we're seeing is that the fluoride is pulling electrons towards it. The chloride is pulling electrons. The bromide is pulling electrons. The iodide is pulling electrons, but each one of these is pulling electrons based on their electronegativity and is delocalizing the negative charge by pulling the electrons through the bonds based on its electronegativity. And that's what induction is. Induction is the delocalization of electrons, or I should just say, let's not even say delocalizations. Induction is the pulling or pushing. Pushing is, I'm going to say in sort of parentheses here, because it's not really pushing, it's just another atom becomes pulling. It's always about pulling, but we can think of it as pushing to a degree. The pulling or pushing of electrons through bonds. That's what induction is. And so what we're seeing here is that the most electronegative element is pulling electrons the strongest, which is delocalizing the negative charge. It's spreading out the negative charge. So what we see is that we can't draw resonance to show it. There is no resonance to be able to draw. But what we can draw is we can draw this to say that a partial minus resides on that fluorine. And that happens because the fluorine is pulling electron density towards itself, and that in and of itself is a delocalization. But the question then becomes, well, how effective is this delocalization? How strong can the delocalization really be by induction? And what is it? What does it mean? So let's take a look at a series of carboxylic acids again. Let's take a look at this one that has a pKa of 4.82. Let's take a look at putting a chlorine on it. The chlorine will go right next to the carboxylic acid. This goes to 2.86. And then because the chain is longer now, what we can do with this longer chain is we can move the chlorine from place to place. 4.05. And then we can move it one more carbon. And what we see here is this goes to 4.52. It is headed back almost to the original. So So we can call this the baseline. This is one bond away. This is two bonds away. This is three bonds away. And what we're finding is that the inductive nature falls off with distance fairly dramatically. So that as I look at one bond away, this has the greatest effect. And so I see a strong induction here, but then the induction here becomes weaker and the induction here becomes very weak. And so it has to do, induction only works when the electronegative atom is very close to the source of where the negative charge is or where the positive charge is, in terms of induction with positive charges. And so induction turns out to be a pretty weak thing. And we can see that the difference between pKa units too, in having that no electron withdrawing group and having the electron withdrawing group only makes a difference of two pKa units. So we're only seeing a two pKa unit difference in terms of what's going on there. This should, at this point, allow us to be able to rank these. I'll rank them in a minute, but I want to go back to one other idea here. Let me look at another idea. Where was that data? 4.87 and 4.76. Let's ask about this guy. This was pKa 4.76. This was pKa 4.82. What was it? 4.87. Okay, this has all hydrogens on it. This one has two hydrogens and it has a methyl group. So what I'm asking here is, what is the nature of the methyl group? Can you tell what the nature of the methyl group is by looking at the pKa values? So we have these pKa values. We can tell which one of these is more acidic. This is acetic acid. This is propanoic acid. And which one of these is more acidic? Lower pKa value, 4.76. The acetic acid is more acidic, right? So what does that mean? What is the nature of the methyl group then? By nature of the methyl group, what I'm trying to ask is, what is the methyl group doing? Is it stabilizing or is it destabilizing to the conjugate of the propanoic acid? So when we look at these and we think about what's happening here, we can take and we can look at these two as a set of reactions, where we can look at the dissociation, and we get the proton that comes over here. And we can look at the dissociation of the propanoic acid. And we know which one of these is more acidic. So because we know which one is more acidic, we actually know a lot more than we realize. This one is more acidic. That means that this is more stable.
Weaker base. This one is less acidic. And that means that this one is less stable. And therefore is a stronger base. Okay, if the propanoate or the propanoate is the stronger base, why is it a stronger base? Why is it less stable? Take it back to delocalization. What that means is that this one must be more delocalized. This one has to be less delocalized. And therein lies the key. What does it mean to be less delocalized? It means that the charge is more concentrated. So if the charge is more concentrated, then that can tell us about what this group is doing. This CH3 group, which sits here, this group is not an electron withdrawing group. It's an electron donating group. And it is pushing electrons, thereby that idea of pushing, where I said that inductively, sometimes things can push. Okay, so what's happening here is that in this molecule, the role of the methyl group and the nature of a methyl group is to be an electron donating group. And it is going to push electron density. It is going to take and push some electron density, not very strong, it's pretty weak, but it's going to push electron density towards the negative, thereby localizing the charge, thereby making this less stable, and thereby making this a stronger base. So what we see is that when we looked at halogens, we can break these up now into different types of groups. When we look at halogens, what we see is that halogens, because of their strong electronegativity, that halogens are electron withdrawing groups. And so we can say fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, that these here, these are what we call electron withdrawing groups. These guys are going to pull electrons. And then when we get to something like a methyl, this type of group, or what we can say is R, which is an alkyl group. Alkyl means all carbon and hydrogen. That these are electron donating groups, and that these are going to push electrons. And so we have groups that can pull electrons and we have groups that can push electrons. Now, this isn't a very exhaustive list. This is a pretty small list, but this is where we start. We start from this component. Okay. And so now what that allows us to do is that allows us to be able to make a hierarchy of all of these different things. Right. And so when we looked at electronegativity and we looked at these different factors, we have electronegativity. We have resonance. We have size, we have induction. And I'm going to add one more into this. The book uses this. The book has a little thing that they use, ARIO. They use A-R-I-O, where A stands for atom, R stands for resonance, I for induction, and then O stands for orbital. And they think about them as being sort of strongest to weakest of the factors. But I take issue with that. I don't like using ARIO, and I think that it can be extremely misleading in a lot of different cases. And so when we were looking at PKAs, we had a carbon acid, we had a nitrogen acid, we had an oxygen acid, we had a fluorine acid. And these were the trends that were electronegativity. This was 60, I'm just gonna go 60, 40, 15, and like 3. So I'm just gonna kind of chunk it out that way. This is 20 pKa units. This is another 25 pKa units. And this one here is 12 pKa units, but usually when we're looking at this, we're like 20 to 25 pKa units. So these are pKa units in terms of how big a difference it can make. Resonance, when we look at things that have resonance associated with them, we were looking at things that were like alcohol versus acetic acid. And the pKa here in the alcohol was like 15.5, and this is like 4.5. Just rounding these numbers out using very common numbers that are there. And so this is a difference that is on the order of about 10 pKa units. When we looked at size, we were looking at FH versus ClH versus bromine H versus IH. These days, I got to go back and get their values. They're not far in my list. And so this was 3.1. This was chlorine at minus 3.9. Bromine is at minus 5.8. Iodine was at minus 10.4. These are on the order of like 5 to 10 pKa units, almost 10 for the fluorine to chlorine. No, that's only 6. Okay, so about 5 to 6 units. This is working. So this is on the order of like 5 to 6 pKa units. And then induction, when we were just looking at induction, we can go back and we can look at those numbers, that what we saw here with induction, and this is probably the best one to go to back up here, is that we were only 2 pKa units, and that changing from one electronegative group to another is on the order of tenths. So this can be a few tenths to maybe up to 2 pKa units. Although if you include a lot, we can get it up to about 4 pKa units. So this induction is really on the order of, let's say, like 1 to 3 pKa units that we're seeing in terms of induction. And that was the last bit of data that we just went through. So we could take, and we could use that carboxylic acid at 4.5 and a carboxylic acid that's got a fluorine in it. And this takes us down to a pKa of like 2.8 something. And so it's just a few pKa units in terms of induction. And yet, when we look at electronegativity, my electronegativity here is lining up with their atom. Resonance fits in, size is not in there, and then they fit in orbital. And I don't have a placement for orbital yet. But the way that I deal with orbital is they're talking about hybridization. They're really indicating hybridization here is what they mean by that. So the question then becomes, well, how does hybridization fit in? Which is a great question. So if we wanted to look at hybridization, then we've got to look at some other acids where hybridization comes into play. So let's take, I'm looking to see if I have the actual numbers and I don't have the numbers I need. So I'm going to make some ballpark numbers here for this one. Methane. Methane is an sp3 hybridized carbon. The pKa on this proton is a pKa of 60. If we take and we look at a carbon, that is sp2, and we look at the acidity of that proton, that proton has a pKa that is on the order of like 26. And if we look at an sp hybridized carbon and the acidity of that proton, the pKa on that proton is around the order of, I want to put it like 15, but I don't have,
hang on, I want this number, so I'm going to get it with the wrong book. It's in Klein. It's usually on the front cover. They have a pKa table, which is super helpful. And I'm off of it. That one's 25, so I have to fix my double bond one, which is 44. Okay, I was off a bit. So this one is 25, and this one is around 44, and that's much better. That syncs better with my brain. Okay, why is this important? Because we're looking at the hybridization in the orbital that the electrons go into. When we lose that proton, and this goes to the conjugate base, we go to a carbon that has that lone pair of electrons in an sp3 hybrid, and that's where the negative charge sits. When we look at a carbon that has its lone pair that is sp2, the sp2 orbital is pulled closer to the carbon, and the negative charge resides there. When we look at something that is sp hybridized, the sp hybridized orbital is much closer to the carbon, and the negative charge resides there. And so it's telling us about the stability of these, in that this one is most stable. Excuse me. This one over here is most stable, and this one's least. You say, well, what about delocalization? Yeah, but this isn't about delocalization. This is about the size of the orbital and how closely the electrons are held towards the carbon. What this is telling us is about electronegativity, that this is literally increasing in electronegativity. The closer you pull electrons to an element is the definition of electronegativity. So an element that pulls its electrons more tightly, holds its electrons more tightly, is more electronegative. And when we line these up with electronegativity, if we think about a carbon acid, an oxygen acid, a nitrogen acid, and then an oxygen acid, that the pKa was 60, 40-ish, and 15.5. And look at our pKas. Our pKas are almost on that order, 44, 40, 25, 15, 60, 60, that hybridization gives you almost the identical nature to electronegativity trend going horizontally across the periodic table. And so what I amend up here in our list is I say electronegativity and I put a slash and I say hybridization. Because a carbon which is sp3 and a carbon which is sp2 and a carbon which is sp have about the same electronegativity as the nitrogen and as the oxygen for those hybridizations. And those give you huge differences in acidity. And so electronegativity and hybridization play about the same role. Resonance, about 10 pKa units less. Size, about half of resonance. Induction, about half of size. And so now we have a factoring list that we can put some faith in, because it's based in data. And we actually have the numbers to back it up, to show how each one of these factors influence acidity. And now that we have all these factors, now the goal is to be able to use them to decide relative acidity, to be able to figure out which molecule is most acidic, which molecule is least acidic, in a relative sense, not in an absolute sense. I'm never going to ask you for a pKa value. I'm never going to say, what is the pKa value of this thing? I'm not going to ask you that. What I'm going to ask you is, which one of these molecules is more acidic? And then we simply apply the factors and we figure it out. Or I'm going to ask you which one of these protons on this molecule is more acidic and ask you to figure it out. And so as we go through and we look at these, we can start to use these different factors to try to figure out which is most acidic and which is not. Okay, now before we, that is weird, I've never seen it do that before. Before we jump in and do this, we need to fix a couple of misconceptions. So I need to deal with a misconception here before we get started. Let's take a look and do a classic problem and say, which is more acidic? We're going to give you a phenol. And let's give you the acetic acid. And we want to know which molecule is more acidic. So first off, how do we tackle this type of problem? What we do is exactly what we've been doing. Number one, we look at the conjugate, or we look at the charged species. Now, charged species, most often that's the conjugate. However, sometimes I give you the charged species. In that case, you just look at the charged species. You don't go to the conjugates. And then we look at resonance. We look at size. We look at induction. We look at all those different factors. So we take the molecule. And we can, in this case, deprotonate it. So I would use a base. I would pull the proton, give the electrons back to the oxygen. And then I would ask, is there any resonance? So now what we do is we check for resonance. Check for induction. Check size. Check all those different things, right? And so if we push the electrons in, we could push the electrons out, and it does look as though there is some resonance that is here on this molecule. I can push the electrons in and push them out. I can do that one more time. Push the electrons in, push the electrons out onto that last carbon. That's my last one of this set. Otherwise, I'd just go back to my starting again. And so, yes, there was resonance associated with that molecule. Now what I do is I do that for the other one as well. And I take a look at the acetic acid. I look at the proton that I'm curious about. I use a base to pull that proton to give the electrons back to the oxygen.
I look for resonance. I can push those electrons in and out. And that's all the resonance I've got. Okay, so now, how do I rank these? Which one of these is most acidic? It looks like resonance is at play. If resonance is at play, resonance is higher than induction in size, so I can ignore induction in size, and I can just look at resonance. So when I've got a problem that's got resonance in it, then I don't really need induction in size. I can cross them off because I go with the highest of the factors. The highest of the factors is going to determine which one of these is the right one. So now I'm going to look to say, all right, which one of these two is more stable? I'll write it down here. Which conjugate is more stable? Well, how do I tell? What have we learned to do from the other chapters or from the other lectures? What we learned to do is we learned to see which one was most delocalized. Whichever one was most delocalized, that's the one that was most stable.
Right? The one with the most resonant structures?
The one with the most resonant structures. Exactly. So we would take the one with the most resonant structures and we would say, okay, this one has more resonance. I'm going to do it in blue. This has more resonance. So this one should be more stable. And then we can look and we can see what the answer is. And so when we compare these, the carboxylic acid has a pKa that was 4.5, and the phenol has a pKa that was 10. Is that matching with our answer? If the phenol and the phenolate ion had more resonance and was more stable, it should be less reactive, weaker base, and it should be the stronger acid. But it's not the stronger acid. There's a problem here. So our reasoning didn't work in terms of more resonance should be more stable. And the reason that it doesn't work is because these negative charges are on carbon, while these negative charges are on oxygen. It's not about how many resonance contributors are there. It is about the quality of the resonance contributors. And so what we find, this is really important. It is not the total number of resonance contributors. It is about the quality of the contributors. In other words, a negative charge on an oxygen is way, way more stable than a negative on carbon. Due to electronegativity. So what I would say is that one of these on carbon, or let's say one on oxygen, that if I have an oxygen here, this is worth approximately five structures on carbon. So this one structure, maybe that's the way that I should say this. Is worth five structures with negative on carbon. That's a really important lesson. And so we cannot just count resonance contributors. We have to look at where the negative is, and we have to weight them. And it's not just the negative, there's also positives. So we keep dealing with negatives, but we really need to start dealing with positives too. But so much of acid base is really about negatives. So we have to look at where the negative is, and add weight to our structures. And so that problem led us to the wrong conclusion. This is actually, and I'm going to come back and I'm going to say this is wrong. I'm going to leave that in the notes, because what we see here is that we have one, two, three contributors with negative on carbon and one on oxygen. So what you can do is you can literally say, okay, here's one on oxygen, here's one on oxygen. Now I've got a second on oxygen and three on carbon, but this second on oxygen is worth like five on carbon. And so this guy outweighs these three. That's literally how I go through and do it, is I take the ones that are equivalent and I sort of cross them off saying they weight the same, cross them off, don't consider. Now I've got three on carbon next to my one oxygen. Now one oxygen is still better than three on carbon. You need to get six or seven on carbon before it starts to outweigh that one negative on oxygen. That's a big, important thing. Okay, now what we can do is we can start to analyze protons in a different way. Now I think we've got enough knowledge base that we can start to ask these types of questions. We can ask the question not just between two molecules, but within a molecule. And we can take and we can say, all right, here's a molecule. Which one of these protons is the most acidic proton? So you've got two here. You've got two there. And we can ask which one of these is the most acidic proton. Let's say that these are HA, B, C, D, and E. So I've got a bunch of protons to consider here. And an individual may look at this and say, okay, I remember, I have that ranking. My ranking was electronegativity, hybridization. Then I have resonance. Then I have size. Then I have induction. And so it may be tempting to just look at this and say, oh, D and C are the most acidic because they're on sp2 hybridized carbons. And so it's possible here to like take this one and this one and say D and C most acidic. But what that doesn't help with is what else could be going on inside this molecule. And so we need to actually take a look at all of the protons one by one and investigate each one by one. So I'm going to put a question mark here. This is tempting, but leads to a wrong answer. So let's go through and see why. So let's start off by pulling HA. And what I'll do is I won't draw all of the protons. I'll just take, redraw the molecule and look at HA. And we'll pull HA off. So we use a base, we remove it, we give electrons back to the actual carbon itself. And then I say, is there any resonance that can happen with that? This is why resonance is so important, because you need to be able to see this resonance very quickly, given how much analysis we're going to be doing. We need to go through and analyze each one of these things. And we need to make sure that we don't make any mistakes in our resonance. All right, now, I did HA. But I need to go and do HB, and then I need to do HC and HD and HE, and I need to do them all before I even ask the question or start to look at it or start to compare. There's no place here where I can just stop. I must do them all before I can start my comparison. So I do the same thing. I use base, pull the proton, give the electrons back to the carbon. Draw that, look to say, is there any resonance that can happen here? I can't push the electrons up into this bond because there's two protons on that one, but I can push down here and push out with the double bond. There is conjugation here that I can utilize. So that takes and puts my negative charge there. And that's all I can get out of that one. All right, now I move on to the next one. I gotta do C. C is that proton. So I use my base, pull the proton, give the electrons back to the carbon. This does place a negative charge on an sp2 hybridized carbon, but there's no resonance. There's no place to push the negative charge to. I cannot push it into this bond because this bond has no place to go. The negative is on the same carbon that shares the double bond. And I can't push it to the right because there's two protons on this carbon. So there's no resonance associated with that. We do the same thing with HD. And we just kind of go on autopilot while we do this part of it, making sure that I'm drawing everything, making sure that I'm getting all the resonance, but again, saving that analysis until after it's all completed. Again, no resonance. I'm going to fit this last one on this one page. I've got space to do it. Okay, so these are HE. And I pull HE. Doesn't matter which one I pull, I just need to pull one of them. Could pull either one. And now I get the negative charge there. And I see that I can push the negative charge into the oxygen. But I can also push that negative charge back down, and back out using the double bond. And so I've got three resonance contributors there. All right, now I zoom out to get the whole picture. And I've also got my rankings up there. Electronegativity, hybridization, above resonance, above size, above induction. The electronegativity and hybridization above resonance is a tricky thing. How do I weigh that depending upon what I've got going on? And there's no easy answers to that. Usually what I try to do is separate the problem so that you don't see electronegativity hybridization at the same time that you're seeing resonance. But in this case, I did it, and I put these two here, which have hybridization, and everything else has resonance in it. And so it's very tempting to go through and to say, oh, these guys here have hybridization, and they're on an sp2 hybridized carbon. But remember that an sp2 hybridized carbon is about as good as a nitrogen. So this is SP2 for these guys. And that's approximately equal to a negative on a nitrogen. But when I look at these other ones, look at what I'm seeing. I'm seeing negative on oxygen. And I'm seeing negative on oxygen. And I happen to know that a negative on an oxygen is way more stable than a negative on nitrogen. And that's just due to the electronegativity, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine. And so what I can do here is I can say, all right, when I'm seeing this negative on oxygen, that's going to be more stable than a negative on nitrogen. These two are out. I can discount those. This one that has resonance and the negative is only on carbons, that one is also out. Now I'm comparing between the top, HA, and HB, and saying that it's one of these two, and I need to decide which of these two is more important. Well, can you see that the negative on oxygen and negative on oxygen weigh each other out? They're identical. And then I have a negative on carbon and negative on carbon right adjacent to the carbonyl. Those two knock each other out, and yet this one has the one additional resonance contributor. This one is the one that is looking most stable. And because that one is looking most stable, what we would say is that we would predict that these protons over here that are called HE the conjugate of conjugate acid of HE, excuse me, conjugate base of HE is most stable, least reactive. And the weakest base. This makes HE the most acidic proton. And that's how we go through and do a problem entirely out. Now you're going, okay, that's great, but how do I know that that's really the answer? And the answer is given to you in that these pKa's can all be measured. And what we find is that the pKa's here, the pKa at this point, so pKa values approximately 20 for that proton, approximately 30 for that proton, approximately 15. And these guys each are approximately 44-ish. And so the lower the pKa value, the more acidic the proton. And our analysis checks out. So you can see how complicated these problems get in that you have to go through and do all the analysis before you can decide on the acidity of the proton. There's no other way to do it. You cannot just look at it and know. The problem must be resolved on paper. You must sit down and do the work and apply all the principles and make a reasoned argument in order to get at the solution. So each one of these takes a considerable amount of work to be able to go through and do. I had another one here where I've got three protons. But before I do that, I'm going to do a couple more to like give you a few other ideas. Let's do this. Have so many different ones that give a lot of different information. Each one has different lessons to learn from it. Which one of these is most acidic? A or B? So there's a process here that we would go through. And usually what we would do is we would deprotonate it, consider the resonance, the induction, the electronegativity. We would number one, deprotonate, Number two, look for resonance. Look for induction. All that other stuff until we could figure out a problem. However, this would be a mistake and this would be the error. What we want to look at is we want to look at the charged species. If you deprotonate this, if you go through and you take the proton off, and you use a base, pull the proton, give the electrons back to the oxygen, what you get is something that has no charge on it. It's a neutral molecule. This is an ion. Neutral molecules cannot be assessed for stability by using resonance, induction, electronegativity. You cannot use these tools on a neutral molecule. The reason is that all neutral molecules are about equally stable. You can't assess relative stability of something that has no charge on it because they're all perfectly stable without a charge on it. It's only when we put a charge on something that we make it unstable, and then we can investigate the degree of the instability or the stability because it has a charge on it. So this is where we want to look. This is at the charged species. And so we want to look at this guy and compare them directly. And we don't need to go to the conjugates. So sometimes it's important to realize that you don't want to go to the conjugate. And so we just look at these two directly and we take each one and we say, all right, what is the induction? And what else is going on in this thing? And what we can see is that here, what we can do is we can pull the electrons up. That gives us a positive on carbon. I can push the electrons in. That gives us a positive on oxygen. And so I have those three resonance contributors. And on the other molecule, I have no resonance. Nothing that spreads the positive charge out. I can't take electrons and tuck them down into here. That's going to give me 10 electrons on oxygen because it already has a lone pair. I can't move that charge by any means to the other oxygen. I can't lift these electrons up and give a negative and an additional positive because that gives additional charges. There's no resonance. There's nothing I can do with this structure. And so right there, this one up here is most stable. That makes this the weakest acid. And by default, this one is the stronger acid. It's less stable. Problem done. And I didn't need to take the proton off. I needed, in fact, to leave the proton on in order to assess this problem. That is often a really confusing thing for students, in terms of understanding when you need to leave the proton on and when you need to take the proton off. Okay. Let's do another one. Let's look at these two. Really important lesson coming up here. Let's look at the acidity. Let's drop this. Yeah, this is good. Let's put the protons here. So this is acetone. And I want to compare that with methyl acetate. And I want to know which is more acidic. And so the proton that we're talking about, we can just claim is that proton there. All three are equivalent, doesn't matter which one we choose, but we're comparing between these two sets of protons, the one on acetone and the one on methyl acetate. And we've got to figure out which one of these is more acidic. So what we do is we pull the proton. We're back into that game of pulling the proton. And I recommend strongly not just plunking a negative charge down, but drawing out the acid-base reaction and the pulling of the proton. And then from there, taking and drawing the resonance associated with each thing. And doing that for each one. And what we see is they have about the same amount of resonance. Okay, so that's all the resonance associated with each one. And if that's the same amount of resonance, then which one of these is more stable? Are there other factors besides the resonance? Methyl acetate has induction. Okay, so the methyl acetate has induction in it, meaning that the oxygen is an electronegative element and the oxygen is pulling electrons. Is that correct, Bryce?
Yes.
Okay, and so that would mean then that if this is pulling electrons, that because the oxygen is an electronegative element, that is induction. And that means that this is more stable. And if this is more stable, then it is a weaker base. And then if that's a weaker base, then that makes this the stronger acid. And that's what we would say. Are we all agreeing? Makes sense to Bryce. Makes sense to me. Okay, drum roll, please. PKA values. The PKA is 19. And PKA 24. Did we get the answer right? No. Okay. In fairness to Bryce, I set this problem up to do exactly this. And Bryce, you answered it correctly with the information that you had. And you did an outstanding job and are to be commended for piping up and putting out an answer out there. And that's exactly what I want you to do every single time. Whether you're right or wrong, you've based that on sound ideas and principles of electronegativity, and that oxygen should be acting as an electron withdrawing group. The question is, why is it not acting as an electron withdrawing group? And what is it doing if it's not acting as an electron withdrawing group? That would be true if I had that carbon with three fluorines instead of three hydrogens, and that is true. Right. So yes, if that instead of wasn't a CF3 instead of an oxygen with a methyl group on it, yes, it would have been more acidic. But the oxygen has an ability to do something different. So what does the oxygen have the ability to be able to do? The oxygen in this instance is acting as an electron donating group. And there is an additional resonance structure to consider. The additional resonance structure to consider is where the oxygen pushes and pushes out, localizing the negative charge. And you say, wait, hold on. That's not even fair. You just created additional charges. You always told me never create additional charges. Why are you creating additional charges now? And why are you saying that that's important? I'm saying it's important because I'm not the one who said it. Mother Nature's the one who determines what the pKa values are. Our models need to take into account what Mother Nature does. So we need to understand when an oxygen can do certain things. This is an oxygen which is placed in conjugation. This is an oxygen that is able to donate its lone pairs of electrons. And when an oxygen can push, the mantra that I usually use is when an oxygen can push, it will push. And that this is important. And it's destabilizing. It is a destabilizing resonance contributor. So resonance is not always stabilizing. Resonance can be destabilizing. Induction is not always stabilizing. Induction can be destabilizing. So not only do we have all these different factors, but these factors can be stabilizing or can be destabilizing depending upon the position that they're in. It is definitely confusing and definitely challenging to understand all of these factors and how all of these factors work together. Let me give you one more. Let me compare this proton versus this one and this one. All right. pKa 19, pKa 24. What do you think this pKa is going to be? Is it going to be more acidic or less acidic than, well, let me just give you the number and then we'll talk about it. I was going to have you try to predict, but 17. Which one of these is most acidic? Let's call this A, B, and C. Which one's most acidic? C. C is definitely most acidic. Why is C most acidic? Okay, so we just went through this whole thing. We just said that induction was not playing a role here, that this thing was directly connected, and because it was directly connected, it's contributing electron density, and it's actually pushing, and it's acting as an electron donating group. Why is this one all of a sudden pKa 17 and the most acidic? Because what happens here is this oxygen is connected by resonance, and this one is acting as an electron donating group. It destabilizes the conjugate. This one over here, we're going to say is like the base value. And then what is this one doing? Well, this one is connected through an sp3 hybridized carbon and can no longer do resonance. Now, this oxygen is not connected in the resonance system. This oxygen now functions by induction and becomes an electron withdrawing group. And it stabilizes the conjugate. And that's what's happening. And so, depending upon how an oxygen is connected, an oxygen can be an electron withdrawing group if it's isolated, or if it's conjugated, it can be an electron donating group, which means that just looking at an oxygen doesn't tell you anything. You need to look at how it's connected, and how it's connected is critically important. How it's connected determines how it functions. No, iPad just died. That was the end of the lecture anyway. Come on, iPad, it just crashed on me. It's gonna take a while to boot back up. Okay, so I'm sorry. I was trying to write how it is connected determines how it functions. And that is a critically important thing. But that was really the last thing that I wanted to hit. So I'm going to get that up in the notes. I'll put it up there. But what this all means is that while we thought that resonance was hard, acid base is a whole lot harder because it involves understanding resonance and utilizing resonance and all of these other competing factors that are going on underneath the hood. We have a few more examples that I want to do with acid base, but really now it's about practice. We've gone through just about all the things that I really need to show you. We've gone through hybridization, we've gone electronegativity, resonance, induction, size. We've done all the factors and we've ranked them, and I gave you data to show why we ranked them. Now it's important for you to go through and to start putting those into practice and to start working problems, and you're going to get a lot of these problems wrong to start with. And that's okay, because you're learning. And that's what's really important. The important part is to try. And the important part is to challenge yourself. And the important part is to then go back, redouble your efforts, and understand why you got each one wrong and the factors that are at play within each problem. There are no shortcuts in these. You must write out everything. And on a quiz or an exam, you must write out everything. Because if you just give me, this one is most acidic, I'm going to give that almost no points if there's no reasoning or explanation there, because these are all about the reasoning. On the contrary, Bryce, I'm sorry to keep pointing at you, but the wrong answer that you gave, if you gave that wrong answer with that perfect reasoning, it would have gotten almost 90% of the points for that problem because it had solid reasoning. There was foundation for the reasoning and foundation for the decision. That's how important it is that you explain your answers. Because even a wrong answer that is founded in good understanding that might be missing something, but is in good understanding of other principles, is still a solid piece of information and accounts for a lot of points in the way that I grade, in the way that I weight things. So that reasoning is key. So you need to practice your reasoning, and that means you need to practice writing everything out, because when an answer involves resonance, I need to see the resonance.
I need to see that that resonance is done directly. All right. That's all my stuff. I'm going to let you guys go. I'm going to cut the thing here. I'm going to go check on that gas leak that they had out in front and see how things are doing. And I'll be back on for office hours at, 1 o'clock. And hopefully I'll see some of you guys in office hours. All right. Take care, everyone.